Okay, and we are now ready to begin Perek Gimel. Okay, so you can either follow along in the Navi if you have one. We're just beginning now. And or you have the sheets in front of you. And we'll see, even if you have a Navi, you should take a sheet, because on the back is going to be some of the other sources. Okay, so first what we're going to do is we're going to read the first paragraph, like through Pasuk Zayin, if you have the sheet. I'm going to read it somewhat slowly. And interject if you have a quick comment or question. But I want to read these seven psukim one time through and then come back. Okay. Vayigah ha-chodesh ha-shivii. And so it was the seventh month, the seventh month of the year. Very good, which is Tishrei. So counting from Nisan. U'bnei Yisrael ba'arim. So all the people who had come, again, they had resettled the towns, right? This is 18 years before the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. It's been only 52 years since the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So families are returning. We saw, again, referencing what we learned last time in Perek Beis, a lot of them returned in groups of either by families or by towns. So it would be, the Brookline would return, and Brighton would return, and there'd be 500 from Brookline and 500 from Brighton. So they're all returning to their communities more or less, apparently. But then in the seventh month, meaning Tishrei, Vayeyasfu ha'am ki'ish achad el Yerushalayim. Everyone gathers together ki'ish achad, like one person.
Isn't there usually a second yud?
That's a good question. I don't remember. There's a whole thing about sometimes how many places. I think Yerushalayim actually is generally in Tanakh without a yud. I'm not sure though. Is that true? Is that correct? Anyone offhand? Normally it's without a yud. I think there are only a few that do have a yud. No, that's an excellent question. All these are very good points. Okay, so everyone gathers in Tishrei. Vayakam Yeshua. That's like the nickname of Yeshua. Yeshua ben Yotzadok, the Achav HaKohanim. So we encountered him last week. He was listed as one of the leaders. So Yeshua ben Yotzadok, who's going to become the first Kohen Gadol. Uzrubavel ben Shaltiel, and he's one of the other main leaders. I believe he was from Yehuda, but maybe I'm not remembering correctly. Ve'achav, and again, they're literally brothers, but they're families. So what do? They get together. Vayivnu es mizbach Elokei Yisrael. They build the altar. Lahalos alav olot, to offer upon it burnt offerings. Kakasuv b'saras Moshe ish Elokim, as it is written in the Torah of Moshe, the man of God. Okay. Now the Beis HaMikdash is not rebuilt yet, meaning they're up on Har HaBayis, they're up on the Temple Mount. There's no building up there, or if it is, it's in ruins. You know, there's pieces of it, but they're building an altar. Okay. Vayachinu hamizbeach al mechonosav, and they set the altar on its foundation.
Okay, hi, Rabbi Hillman.
Kibe 8. Now, listen, this is a little difficult phrase, so let's read this carefully. Pasuk Gimel. They set the altar on its foundation.
Kibe hi, Rabbi Hillman. Aleihem
me'ameh ha'aratzos. Because they were afraid of, literally, there was fear upon them from the other nations of the land who were living there. Okay? They felt kind of intimidated. They weren't totally comfortable. But there are other peoples living there, apparently. Vayalu alav olos laHashem, and so they offer burnt offerings, olos laBokar v'laArav, every morning and evening. Those are the tzmidim. The daily offerings are burnt offerings every morning and every evening. Okay. Vayasu eschag hasukos kakasuv, and they celebrate the holiday of Sukkot as it is written in the Torah, meaning in terms of the sacrifices, and maybe more generally as well. V'olas yom b'yom b'mispar, eat the burnt offerings of the day, each day according to its number. K'mishpat dvar yom b'yomo, like its law, each day and each day. Mm-hmm. Now, just a quick note, that, I don't know if that phrase sounds familiar, B'mispar k'mishpat. It is very simple. If you just flip quickly, again, this is like it appears many times in the Torah. But just one example, the top source. Sorry, a little small print. Umin chasam v'niskehem laparim la'alim la'kvasim v'misbaram kamishvat. That maybe, yeah, exactly. There are a lot of places in the Torah when it's listing, it says that, and these are the offerings, and you'd offer it in their proper number, in their proper way, according to their laws. So the psukim are echoing, psukim of Ezra are echoing the psukim in the Torah. So they celebrate Sukkos, a really big deal. This is the first Sukkos back. Okay.
And they were building Sukkos, well, like around?
Presumably, I think, I can't, you know, later in Ezra it's going to.
The altar and things like that?
I don't know if necessarily, but presumably, the book of Ezra is going to describe the holiday of Sukkos, yeah, with huts. Not this Sukkos. I don't know if they're doing it on the Temple Mount, but yeah, they're doing everything. But what's significant is presumably they were doing that to the best of their ability in Bavel also, just like we.
Right.
But the big deal was we're doing it the whole thing with the sacrifices as well.
So it says that that God will only permit sacrifices to be offered where his name is mentioned once you go up into Eretz Kodesh.
Yeah.
And presumably it was still possible to offer a sacrifice on the Temple Mount, even though the altar may not have been the same exact fabrication at that point, or still the same location, so they were still, it was still okay to bring a sacrifice.
We're going to get into that, yeah. But yeah, that's going to, yeah.
All right, and the second question is it's interesting that it's Sukkot, because it says the fear of all, like the nations, and then the whole holiday is about the 70 nations, and there's actually a Gemara that says that if they knew how important it was, they'd whip us with barbed wire
to get us to do it.
To get, and yet they're, it's almost like they're exercising that
okay,
fear,
so,
or something. It's like the rebuttal.
So you're right. So Philippe is pointing out that Chazal have a tradition that the 70 cows of Sukkos correspond to the 70 nations, and it's also a prayer for them. That's when there's Chazal that says that if they would understand that, appreciate it, they would, you know, be hearing us to
burning us.
Right, and here they're offering it, and yet there's some sort of fear. We're going to come back, because it's a little ambiguous what that phrase is saying. We're going to come back to that.
Because
they were afraid. So what's the link
there? Antidote to like threat.
So let's we'll come back to that. We'll come back to that. Let's just finish the paragraph. So they celebrate Sukkos. V'acharei kein, and then after that, from then on, olas tamid, they would continue to offer the burnt offerings, the daily offerings. V'lechadashim, would be offered on every Rosh Chodesh. U'lechol mo'adei Hashem, hamekudashim, and on all of the holy holidays. U'lechol misnadev nedava l'Hashem, and also whoever would come and bring a voluntary offering. Now, wait a second. Okay. Then, Pasuk Vav says, miyom echad l'chodesh hashvi'i, and it was on the first day of the seventh month, which is Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
Hechelu lahalos olos lahashem. They began offering burnt offerings.
Mm.
So where did that come from? It sounds like Sukkot was like the big
year.
Was like
maybe it's the next year. I don't know.
It doesn't sound like it, because then they would say they started Sukkot, and then it sounds like it's saying the way it sounds like is that. Sort of like the big official, inauguration, when we kind of really ever gather together and celebrate, was on Sukkos. Mm-hmm. But they actually had started offering some offerings 2 weeks before on Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
American Express gold member.
So then, how do you do Yom Kippur with just an altar, just in these bags?
That's an excellent question. Excellent question. Let's keep going. Now, and then the Torah, the Navi just points out, and you should know, V'heichal Hashem lo yusad. The sanctuary of God had not been established. There was no foundation yet, meaning there's no building there. There's no Kodesh HaKadashim. You know, I don't know if the menorah or shulchan, any of that else is set up. It's just an altar. That's all they have.
Wow. And rubble everywhere, right?
Yeah.
It's destroyed.
Yeah, it's interesting if you think about it, what it must have been like, meaning, because it still was amongst destruction.
It says, the last time in Parak Beis, it talked about all the gold and silver implements that they brought back. So
yeah.
Those so they had all like these, lying around. Still,
yeah, so they had that. They had these golden and silver knives and bowls.
Didn't say the menorah or anything.
It doesn't. It's not listed now. No. It's not listed. It's not listed. Okay, now one more pasuk. And while this is all going on, vayinu kesef lachotzvim v'lacharashim, they had given silver, money, to different craftsmen and artisans and woodworkers. Uma'achal u'mishteh v'shemen, and apparently they bartered with food and drink and oil, which they gave to latzidonim v'latzorim. Those are people from the north, merchant seafarers from the north, Sidon and Sor places. Lehavi atse arazim min halvanon, to import cedar wood from the Lebanon forest. El Yam Yafo, will be brought in through the Yafo port. Kirishion Koresh Melech Parasa Lehem, just as Koresh, the king of Persia, who was ruling over this whole area, you know, gave them official, sanction to, start this big building process and also to be importing all of these materials. Okay, does that sound familiar to anyone?
Iron, maybe? Like when they built the first time?
Very good, very good. Yeah. So, okay, so we're going to make 2 points and connect them. So, one possibility, there's a soft opening on Rosh Hashanah, and the official opening, once they made sure like it was working, on Sukkot. Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Now,
when was the last time they did this?
Yeah, okay, exactly. You know, I mean, it was for real, but you're right. There was some, they were worried. They wanted to start a little bit. That's definitely, maybe there's some aspect of that is true for sure. But if you flip over, it seems like there's something else going on. So if you look in the second source, this is from Malachim Aleph, the sixth and eighth chapters, which describe the building and inauguration of the first Beis HaMikdash. So let's read the second group of psukim there. So, Bayomahu was on that day. Kidesh HaMelech, the king, meaning King Shlomo, sanctified Estoch HaChatzer, the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, where the Mizbeach is, where the altar is, Asher Lifnei Beis HaShem, which is in front of the house of Hashem. Ki Asa Sham Es HaOlav, Es HaMenchav, Es Chalbei HaShlamim, he offered every kind of offering. This is on the day of the inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash. Because the copper altar, which is in front of a god, katon mehachil, was too small to accommodate all the sacrifices they're bringing. That they had some special thing; they were like bringing sacrifices in the courtyard, not on the altar. It couldn't hold. Es haolav, es hamenchav, es chabei hashlamim. Vaya Shlomo beisahi, and Shlomo at that time made esachag, the great celebration, but it means Sukkot. It's about Sukkot. V'chol Yisrael imo, kahal gadol, everyone was there. Milavo chamas nachal Mitzrayim, again, from the east to the west. Lifnei Hashem Elokeinu, in front of Hashem. Shivas yamim v'shivas yamim, 7 days and 7 days, means there's a 7-day inauguration right before Sukkot, leading into the 7 days of Sukkot. Arba asar yom, 14-day celebration to inaugurate the Beis HaMikdash. And we read this as the Haftorahs, a few times over Sukkot. I don't remember which days of Sukkot.
Didn't they not fast that Yom Kippur?
Yeah, so Chazal say that day, because if 7 days before Sukkot includes Yom Kippur, right. So they didn't fast that Yom Kippur, because they were celebrating the opening.
I mean, how do you get around not fasting on Yom Kippur?
Okay, it was a pretty smooth, big deal.
All right. So the Nevi'im probably told them.
Yes. Yeah, that is correct. So presumably, part of it is that everyone remembered the Beis HaMikdash was inaugurated on Sukkot. Right. So now they're coming back and they're trying to rebuild, restore the glory of the Beis HaMikdash. So even though they began sort of offering some sacrifices on Rosh Hashanah, but when they were going to really get together and sort of celebrate it, it was going to be on Sukkot, because that's when Shlomo did it. And it's clear that they're trying to rebuild Shlomo's Beis HaMikdash, because he does what Shlomo does. This is on Pesukim on the second page. In terms of the materials, they remember the Pesukim Malachim described that Shlomo had all these trade deals with the North to bring down the wood, because that's where the fanciest, nicest wood was, the cedar wood from Lebanon. They could have had gotten other wood. You know, there are some trees around Yerushalayim that they could start building, but they didn't want that. They wanted this to be like Shlomo's Beis Hamikdash. Now we're gonna see if they're not successful. And maybe part of it was they were shooting too high, meaning they're not gonna be able to rebuild it the way it was. But originally, that's what they were trying to do.
There were also the money from the Solomon's treasury is mentioned, how much he's paying these people.
Yeah, that's all the malachim.
And it's also said here too
that they're paying.
Like, they have these like basically all these Solomon pay, there's like bills of labor.
Sorry, was someone else going to say something? Okay. So that's presumably part of what's going on here. Okay. Let's read two more psukim, okay? Because it's connected. Well, there's some more to talk about in the first part. Ubashana hashenis, however, it was in the second year, a year later, livoam el beis ha'elokim liushalayim, after they've come to, again, where the base of the shalis is supposed to be, bachodesh hasheni. So that is Iyar. Hechelu zrubavel ben Shaltiel, v'yeshua ben Yotzadok, same people. Ushar achehem hakoanim b'halabiim, b'chol habaim mehashvim Yerushalayim, and all everyone who was coming back from the captivity, I mean the captives of Yerushalayim, I mean those who were taken captive from Yerushalayim to Babel. Okay, now what do they do? Vayamidu es halabiim mi ben esrim shana v'mala, and in particular they also took, again, there weren't so many Levium, but whatever Levium there were, 20 years and up, Linat Seach al Meleches Beis Hashem. Okay. In short, that means they begin actually the construction, building the building. Okay. Now, Linat Seach is a difficult word, and there are many commentators of different different suggestions. Anyone want to throw out Linat Seach? It's a difficult word, right? So some say it's like sing, like lam not seach, and it's a levium. So they understand it to mean, meaning that they got, the levium were there to like the, exactly. Levium were there were to like motivate everyone, let's go, you know, and they were singing as they were building. So it could be something like strength and like, because it can also mean like to defeat, to like conquer. So then they understand it to mean sort of, again, just to sort of, strengthen, not necessarily through singing, but just to strengthen the work. And others say just, it means like oversee. And they were sort of, the Levium were put in charge of the building. So whatever exactly the word means, but it means they began building the building in ER. So presumably they had some sort of official, exactly. So why do they do that? So that again, it's because that's what Shlomo did. So if you go back to the back of the page. So this is the first lines in the source. Vayhi bishmonim shana v'arba'a me'o shana letzeis b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim was 480 years after the Jewish people left Egypt. Vashana ha-revi'is, in the fourth year of Shlomo's reign. V'chodesh ziv, the month of ziv. Hu chodesh ha-sheni, it's the second month of Iyar. Limloch Shlomo al Yisrael, when after Shlomo became the king. Va'even Abai Slashem, and then they began building. They began building the building. Now, because in Shlomo it's the opposite. They build the whole building, they build everything, and then they start offering the karbanos, which was on Sukkos. Here things are reversed because just the circumstances are different. So but they're trying to do everything the same way. So they begin, you know, with all the fanfare offering on the Mizbeach on Sukkos. And they officially begin the building in ER, because that's what Shlomo did. That's what the tradition was. So that's what they seem to be doing.
Okay. So when they first came back, once they came back and they had authority over the area, I guess the feeling was that then they had an obligation to give sacrifice.
Very good. Less about that. So two things we're going to see. They have the ability. I'm not sure if they really had full authority. But correct, they, whatever authority they had, they wanted to start bringing the sacrifices. Now, let's go back to the pasuk about them being afraid. So that's sort of the hint in these psukim that not everything is right, or at least it's not going to work out. So again, let's read Pasuk Gimel again. And they established the Mizbeach on its foundation, for they were afraid of the other people around, and they began offering the sacrifices. So just what does that mean? Just what's the because? What is they did something because they were afraid. Yeah.
They're trying to establish their authority to be there. And, you know, they're frightened. They've got hostile people around them. But as soon as they can, like, lay claim, they're going to...
Very good. So if I remember it, very good. Definitely someone on the page. I think Ibn Ezra says like that. That meaning just for political reasons, right. Meaning it was they were worried, exactly, facts on the ground, that they were afraid and things were a little precarious. So they said, okay, we better start doing this now, because if we don't start doing it now, then you know, maybe we won't have the chance. Very good. So that's how I believe the Ibn Ezra learns like that. Rashi learns, I believe, I could be not remember correctly who says what, that they were scared. So they were basically diving for Hashem's help. They were basically thinking, we better start offering sacrifices and praying and doing every mitzvah that we can so that God will protect us. You know, presumably, I guess, you know, if we start offering sacrifices, God's going to destroy this thing again a second time. I mean, you know, so let's start offering sacrifices so we have God's protection. There's, does everyone know the pink set in the, pinkish-whitish set in the, basement or downstairs of on Tardavim Ksuvim, it's called Dot Mikra. I should have brought it up here so you can see. So the next time you're in the basement, you should look. So on the left side, there's like a whole shelf you'll see here. There's like pinkish, whitish colored. And if you look at it, it's every book of Tanakh. So that is a full commentary on Tanakh, different it's from Israel. It was put out in the last, I don't know, 50 years or so. And there's some sort of board that oversees the whole thing, but different people are the author of the commentary on each volume. Some people have more than one volume. And it's totally loyal to, you know, the Masorah and Chazal, generally speaking, meaning totally in the spirit of it. But, you know, it's a commentary that now that we have archaeology and we have some, you know, other sources to help understand, like they'll have pictures of coins or, you know, different things, or, you know, here they would have pictures of like the Lebanon trees, the cedar trees in Lebanon. So it's, a modern commentary in that sense. So sometimes they have interesting suggestions of new interpretations. So the author, which is the author on Ezra, he suggests this reading. He suggests like this. What does it mean, Vayachinu ha-mizbeach al-machonosav? And they set the mizbeach on its foundations. So we'll see Chazal understood that to mean that they rebuilt the mizbeach in the exact original location. And that's what the pasuk is trying to say. And that this is not gonna necessarily be against that, but what he says is additionally what that means is, it means they set the Mizbeach on its foundations, meaning the original foundations were still there. There was some, again, it had been knocked down, destroyed, torn apart, but there was some semblance of the original stones of the foundation still there. So what the Pasuk says is as follows, they really should have built a new Mizbeach from scratch, you know, and, you know, to make it as nice as possible. They should have removed the rubble and built a whole new, nice new Mizbeach from scratch, but they couldn't do that because they were afraid. There was too much pressure going on. They couldn't do it exactly the way we wanted it. So what they did was they sort of, again, rebuilt on top of the, you know, original semi-destroyed foundation of the Mizbeach. And that's what the pasuk means. So it means, and they established the Mizbeach on its original foundations, sort of kind of just put it back together because they were afraid they couldn't do more than that. So I thought that was a very interesting suggestion. Okay. Any questions or comments where we are right now?
In general, is it better presumably to tear down the existing structure and build it anew? Or to incorporate it, like, you know, if you have the Kotel, for example, it's been here for a while.
Right.
You can tear it down and rebuild a new Western Wall or what?
You're asking, it's a good question. God willing, when we can like rebuild everything. I don't know. There are advantages of the both, obviously. You're right. I find it hard to believe you would knock down the Kotel. But I don't know. That's what this author was suggesting, that it would have been nicer if they would have rebuilt it from scratch. But I hear maybe they didn't want to. Okay. One major issue in Chazal. In understanding these psukim, is the following. There's the following debate in Chazal. When Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beis HaMikdash and conquered the land of Israel, did that sort of cancel the sanctity, the Kedusha of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash? And Ezra needed to re-sanctify it, just like Shlomo sanctified it, you know, in terms of now it's a holy place, someone who's impure can't go there, it's now the only place that it's permitted to offer sacrifice. So was that all canceled when Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beis HaMikdash and it had to be recreated, that sanctity? Or no, the sanctity was still there, the sanctity of the locations was still there, it was still been forbidden for someone who was impure to go up on the Temple Mount during the 70-year period. It's just a physical building was destroyed. So that's a debate amongst Chazal. Now we will see later on, Ezra will do some sort of re-sanctification ceremony. And Chazal will dispute, was that really necessary to create the Kedusha? Or it was more of, again, just symbolically to show that, you know, the Beis HaMikdash is up and running again. So I'm just thinking how much of the source is here to read. So let's just read one mission on the second page. Amar Rebbe Eliezer, this is a Mishnah. Shamati, I heard, I have a tradition for my teachers. Kishahayu bonim beheichal, when they were rebuilding the structure of the Beis HaMikdash, the sanctuary. Osim klayim laheichal, uklayim lazarot. So temporarily they put up temporary walls, klayim are curtains, where the walls of the building of the Beis HaMikdash and the courtyard walls should be until they could put up the permanent walls, rebuild the permanent walls. Yeah, sort of something more like the Mishkan. Ela shebeheichal bonim mibachutz, but the walls of the actual sanctuary, the workers would sort of stand on the outside and build it, because so they wouldn't be within Ubazar, but for the courtyards, bonim mibachutz, they could be on the inside building it. Okay. Amar Rebbe Yeshua, and then Yeshua, which sounds like he's responding to Rebbe Eliezer, he says, Shamati, I have a tradition. Shemakriven afal pi she'ein bayis. That's a key phrase. You can offer sacrifices even if there's no building. Va'ochlin kadshe kadshim afal pi she'ein klayim. And you can eat the holy meat, which has to be in the inner area, even if there are no curtains. Kadshim kalim ma'aser she'ini, and lower level holy items, which has to be in Yerushalayim. Af pi she'ein chom, even though there's no wall. Meaning the physical area is holy. You don't need any sort of walls or anything. Why? Shekedusha Rishona, the original sanctity of Shlomo HaMelech, Kidsha L'Shaita, it sanctified it in the present, in the days of Shlomo, V'Kidsha L'Asid Lavo, and it sanctified it for all future. And so even though there's no building there, the area is just as holy, and you can offer sacrifices without there being any temple, any building.
So it's a state of permanent Kedusha.
Permanent Kedusha.
Total Temple Mount,
yeah,
right?
Permanent Kedusha.
All right.
So, and the Gemara has a dispute. What does Rabbi Eliezer hold? Some say, this is what Rabbi Eliezer and Rishua are disagreeing about. Rabbi Eliezer felt that no, the sanctity was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, and they had to re-sanctify it. And to re-sanctify it, they had to have at least a temporary building based on Mikdash.
That gets why there's something on the outside.
You're saying because it wasn't holy, I don't remember if to look of the Gemara, but we'll have to look it up. But that's a good question. I honestly don't remember. But But the Gemara also says, no, it could be Realizer agrees with Rabbi Yeshua. And he's just saying that the tradition was they wanted to get up a temporary structure as quickly as possible. It's kind of not, the Lashon of the Gemara is actually, it's not sanua, it's like not modest to just sort of have an altar out in the middle of nowhere. You should have some sort of structure around it. So they put up the temporary structure, but not that it was halachically necessary. Because again, the sanctity is permanent. Right, so we do assume that. We assume that sanctity. Yeah, that. Well, I don't know if we have time. The Rambam writes that. That's the opinion that we assume.
So this kedusha, whether it was destroyed and
brought
back.
Yeah.
Don't we sort of feel like it's always there because we don't go up to the temple mount now?
Right. So we do assume that. Yeah, we assume like Rabbi Eliezer.
There's some. Like yeah. You're not supposed to be there, right?
Yeah, exactly. We do assume that. We do assume that that's what the Rambam writes. That's what Rambam writes. There's an ambiguous comment of the Ravid who's commenting on the Rambam, but the Rambam writes explicitly. That's this Rambam here.
Is that because you might be, everyone is assumed to be Tuma now.
Yeah.
And you might violate.
Yeah, I don't want to get to the details. There are different areas of the Temple Mount, different kinds of Tuma, and even if you are Tummy, in some ways, you could still go in some areas of the Temple Mount, but yes.
You know, I didn't know when I was searching. I didn't know this. I went up with my grandparents.
Okay.
I didn't know this.
Some of the Temple Mount is not really Temple Mount, so hopefully, no. There are. It's a debate. There are definitely very big Tummy Chum who say it's fine to go up in certain areas. Okay. Let's see the next source on the page. This is a Gemara. Amar Rav Yochanan. Shlosh Navim Alu Imahem in Agula. There are three prophets that returned with them from the exile. Rashi says Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. Those are three Navim who are prophesizing at this time. Echad Shehayed Lahem al Mizbeach. One came and literally testified for them regarding the Mizbeach. And Rashi says what that means is they increased the size slightly of the Mizbeach compared to the first base of ministry. It was in the same area, but just they increased the size. So one told them that they can and should do that. The Echad Shehed Lahem al Makam Mizbeach, one came and told them exactly the right location that should be the exact location of the original Mizbeach. The Echad Shehed Lahem Shemakriv and Afal Pi Sheim Bayis. And one testified this idea that they can start offering sacrifices even though there is no there's no building. And that's what the halacha is, Makriv and Afal Pi Sheim Bayis. And that's because the Kedusha is still there. Now, the commentaries point out that even though Makriv and Afal Pi Sheim Bayis said it is permissible to offer sacrifices, even though the building's not there because the sanctity is permanent, otherwise you would not be able to offer sacrifices there, it's only permission, meaning it's not an obligation. There is no, so for example, let's say nowadays, even if the Kedusha is still there, leaving aside any practical problems, since there's no Beis HaMikdash, there is no obligation, you know, to go up and offer, you know, the daily offering. Okay, it's makriven. You can. So they obviously, in the days of Ezra, they obviously wanted to. It was very important to them, but they were not technically obligated yet. But
it would be the presence of the actual.
Once the building's up, then that's it. You're obligated to. You have to start doing the full service. Yeah. Okay. All right, let's read a little bit more. The rest of the psukim we won't have as much to comment on. Okay, so now we're up to pasuk tet on the source sheet. Vayamod Yeshua banav echav Kadmiel ubanav bnei Yehuda. Again, these people got up together, ke'achad all together. Linatzeach alosei hamalachad. Again, to oversee, to strengthen the work. Beit ha'elokim, house of Hashem. Bnei chen adad, bnei hem v'achayam ha'leviim. Those were the Levium families. They lay the foundation. The building's not up, but they lay the foundation. Again, this is beginning in ER. And the Kohanim get up, dressed in their special clothing with trumpets. And the Levim of the Asaf family were the singers. With, I think, cymbals. Is that how they normally translate that? Lahalel et Hashem, to praise Hashem. Alidei David Melch Yisrael, meaning with the Tehillim that was written by David. What do they say? Vayanu b'halal uvodo l'Hashem, and they are calling, responding, praising, thanking God. Kito ki li'olam chasto, meaning reading those psukim, the same psukim that we say in Halal. Al Yisrael, for Yisrael. V'chol ha'am heiriu trua gedola, and everyone is crying out, screaming out, in a good way, b'halel l'Hashem, singing halel, praising Hashem, al husad beit Hashem, that the foundation had been set. Now listen to this, though. V'rabim mehakohanim v'halvi'im v'rashei ha'avot hazikenim. However, many of the kohanim, the levim, and the leaders, the elders, asher ra'u et habayit harishon biyasto, who saw the first Beis HaMikdash, ze habayis be'einehem, and now this house was in their eyes, bochim b'kol gadol, were weeping. V'rabim bitrua b'simcha laharim kol, but many people who didn't see the first one, again, we're now 52, 53 years later, so there definitely could be people who saw it. But everyone else, they're completely joyous. Next pasuk, this is a little difficult pasuk, let's read carefully. V'ein ha'am makirim kol truata simcha l'kol b'chi ha'am. I would have read this as follows. And the people could not distinguish between the cries of joy and the crying. Ki ha'am miri'im trua gedola, because everyone was just screaming so loudly, the hakol nishma ad lamerachok, and just the sound was going, you know, you could hear it from very far away. So I would have read this pasuk that, again, it's still very powerful. Many people are screaming, are singing halal so loudly, and many people are unfortunately crying, but you couldn't really, everything was just sort of mixed together. And you couldn't really discern one for the other. The Gemara reads the psukim, that they read that the crying was even louder. Maybe that means, that's generally understood as literally. I mean, the Gemara understood literally the crying was louder than the singing. I don't know, maybe you can understand it sort of metaphorically, meaning like in Shemayim, sort of the crying was, the crying was louder. That was sort of, the more power, if you were seeing it, that's what would like stay with you more.
The way the translation has it in this verse is the people did not notice the sound of the joyful shouting because of the sound of the people's weeping. Although the people shouted with a great joy and the noise was heard from far, that gives the implication that the weeping was more prominent.
Yeah, that's following the Gemara. That's how the Gemara puts it.
Yeah, I mean, but it seems, from the translation, it seems obviously in the Sukkim too.
Well, I don't know, because they have to read, I don't want, Kiham, they're reading that second key as although,
uh-huh,
as opposed to because if you just because, then that doesn't make sense, because it says the simcha was loud. Drugadol is referring to the simcha. So he's reading, although the simcha was loud, the crying was even louder.
Yeah, that's what I get.
Yeah. Okay, so let me just tell you one story. When I read the sukkim, it makes me think of this story. So Rav Shechter from YU always tells this story. So I don't think he was alive at the time of this, but at least as an adult, but this is the story he always tells. So every 3 or 4 years, YU has a Chag HaSmicha. We're celebrating, everyone's gotten Smicha in that 3 or 4 year cycle. So when Rav Soloveitchik was alive, so he would speak, he would be the big speaker at every Chag HaSmicha. Now before Rav Soloveitchik, though, was sort of the most esteemed Rosh Hashiva. So his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, was the most esteemed Rosh Hashiva. And it was when his father, Rav Moshe, died, that's when Rav Soloveitchik started going to YU to give shir. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik died in 1941. So the story has to be before 1941. So Rav Shechter always says there is a Chag HaSmicha, and so Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was the main speaker, talking to all of the musmachim, the new rabbis and their families and so forth. And again, this is before 1941. It has to be, because he died in 1941. So before 1941, you know, Torah and Orthodox Judaism, right? Things are not, America's not so good, right? Okay. So he gets up there, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, and he reads these psukim. He says like this. He says, I look out at you and I see, you see where he's going? I see how happy you are, your accomplishment, you've gotten your smicha. He's like, I want you to know, me and many of my contemporaries who are up on the stage, we know the yeshivas of Europe, and were crying.
That's a nice gift.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That is, I don't know how he could actually say that. Wow. It must have been, he said, and therefore I am, you know, like motivating you to keep learning and become even greater. That's what I assume how he spun it to then become positive. But anyways, that's the story. Okay. All right. So now we actually finished all of Perek Gimel. Let's actually do some of Perek Dalet also. Okay. Briefly, we won't have so much on this, on these psukim either. So they're building. They've started offering the sacrifices and they've begun building. They laid the foundation. And so the enemies of Yehud and Binyamin, those are Jimmy tribes, they hear what's going on. That the Jewish people are building their sanctuary. And again, especially back then, having, you know, every country had their God, and you know, having the God of Israel's sanctuary, temple in the area, that also was just like a political statement, like you were saying, that this is the land of the Jewish people. So they're getting very upset at this, the other people who are there. So they go to the Jewish leaders. And they say to them, Nivna imachem, let us build with you. We want to help you. Because we also seek out, but it means pray or serve your God. Now, this is a kriyuktiv. It's written one way, but it's supposed to be read another way. It's read as velo anachnu zovchem, and to him we offer. But it's written as velo, means sort of a commentary. They didn't really, right? You hear that? You see it said that, right? Right? They didn't really, meaning whether literally or just in their kavana, they you know, they didn't really serve the God of Israel. But they're saying, we serve your God. Miyamei, from the days of Esar Chadon Melech Ashur. Esar Chadon, the king of Assyria, that is the son of Sancheriv, who had exiled the 10 tribes. Hamale Otanopo, who brought us here. Because remember, Sancheriv and the Assyrian kings, they conquered this land and that land, and they would forcibly move all these people around. So there are all these other nationalities from other places who are living in Israel. Just like the Jews were moved from Israel to Babylonia, Babylonians or other nations were moved there. So these are the people that are there. So they're saying, come, let us help. Now you'll see the Jewish leaders realize they're saying that to somehow undermine it. They're not, because it's not that they really want to help. V'yom alahem Zerubbabel v'Yeshua, u'shar rashi avos l'Yisrael. So the leaders respond, lo lachem v'lanu, livno space l'elokeinu. It is not something for you and us to do together to build the house for our God. Ki anachnu yachad nivne l'Hashem Elokei Yisrael. It is for we together, meaning we alone, for us to build our temple. Kasher sivanu ha-melech koresh melech paras. And also that is what Koresh commanded. He commanded us to build the temple. Now it's interesting. Chazal understand, we don't have time, it's on the back sheet. Chazal understand that this wasn't just an excuse that they said, but either then or soon after, they actually made a rabbinic enactment that we don't take donations from non-Jews to build the Beis HaMikdash, or to rebuild even the Beis HaMikdash. Now, it's interesting, because we accept sacrifices from non-Jews, right? Which is interesting, right? I don't know if every religion, you know, does that. But as long as if the non-Jewish person believes in one God, even though the person is not Jewish, if they want to come to the Beis HaMikdash and offer sacrifice, we offer it just like a Jewish person's sacrifice. So they are
certain types, right?
Correct. Yeah, there's certain rules. But fundamentally, a non-Jewish person can come and offer a sacrifice. So they are invited in that way. But in terms of building the Beis HaMikdash, that should be left to the Jewish people. Becomes, for these kinds of reasons, it just becomes too dangerous once you let other people.
Has that halacha been translated to synagogues in the diaspora or not?
That's a very good question. I actually was looking that up. I don't think so. Yeah.
I mean, for instance, I know in Canada, where I visited a shul, the government subsidized as a heritage.
Yeah, we do that. So this is unique.
Gave the money to renovate.
This is unique to the Beis Hamikdash. Yeah. Okay, let's read the last few psukim. So they say, no, thank you. We'll do it ourselves. Vayhi am ha'aretz mirapim yedei am Yehuda. This is going to be setting up what the next prayer will be about. And so the people of the land, the other people, begin trying to weaken the hands of the Jewish people. Umivahalim osam livno. Somehow trying to overwhelm them, literally. How do they translate it? Somehow to prevent them to be able to build. Visochrim, this is like if it's like with a sin, and they hired Alehem Yoatsim, they hired advisors, Lahafer Atzasam, to be able to stop their plans, and maybe bribing, you know, other officials, maybe. Kol Yemei Koresh Melech Paras, all the days of Koresh, so they're not going to really be able to do it for the whole reign of Koresh. Va'ad Malchus Daryavesh Melech Paras. And they won't be able to do it until Daryavesh, the Persian king. And then it says another pasuk, Ube Malchus Achashverosh. And during the reign of Achashverosh, which Chazal understand to be between Koresh and Daryavesh, B'tchilas Malchuso, in the very beginning of his reign, Kasvu Sitna, they wrote, letters of hatred.
Calumny.
Yeah. To Achashverosh. Meaning they're writing letters of these Jewish people. We're going to see that they start saying they're trying to build a temple, they're rebelling against you, and so forth. Al Yoshvei Yehuda Yushalayim, regarding again the people of Yehuda Yushalayim. And so then we're going to see the next prakam. We're going to be about basically those fights and the struggles to get past it.
Let's talk
about it more next time. We're gonna it's a little confusing, it's a little complicated, honestly.
Rabbi Kassi, yeah. So presumably for the third Beis Hamikdash, we cannot accept any contribution building, right? I mean, if that's a lacha.
I assume. I mean, in theory, if there's a new Sanhedrin, what?
Presumably, you get fair market price instead of contributions, right? They bought the wood.
Well, there are other things. Right. Yeah, they could be involved in that way. Yeah, and there are other things they could donate. Again, they could donate sacrifices. Let's say they want to donate.
What is forbidden for them to contribute? For the structure itself.
But
it seemed like they wanted to build. It was the labor they wanted to contribute.
I'm not sure. I don't know. In the halacha, like if you look at the Rambam, it's talking about donating money for this that will be used for the structure itself. Is not allowed.
It could be similar to Abraham wanting to buy his.
Exactly, this is ours, right? Right. This is like,
we'll hire you, but we don't want any donations because it's.
Exactly. And listen, once we build it, once it's our temple, our Beis Hamikdash, you can come and offer sacrifice. But we need to build our Beis Hamikdash.
Preserve the integrity, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
They built them. Now, whether they did it correctly, I don't know. They built a menorah. They have all kinds of kelim that they've made.
Yeah, the clothing, the begadim.
The mizbeach has a hub. They have a little mizbeach, but they still haven't built the big mizbeach.
Well, that, yeah.
They have this big
kelim. And that's also, right? the big mizbeach is permanently attached. It's attached to the ground, so it's not like some. Yeah, it's not.
So I asked the guide, I said, well, so you're planning to build by Shlishi, right?
Yeah.
So I said, well, what are you going to do with the Arabs? So I didn't have an answer to that. But
that's why we wait for Mashiach.
maybe you could leave the Al-Aqsa Mosque alone. Just like they can come up and offer sacrifices, they can come up and.
But is that the same spot, though? I mean,
we'll see. We don't know how these things are going to work out. Somehow, things will happen in a way that will surprise us.
Maybe it's like a miniature or something else. Put in the mousetrap. Or something.
Okay. All right. Good night, everyone. I'll stay and talk, whatever it should. Were you guys away?
You're away, too.